Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps, the OG 90 Day Fiancé podcast, and place where I, Jody, your best friend and inner voice, break down all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, Lifetime to Bravo, even WeTV and Netflix, let's break down all the cringeworthy moments together. Be sure to check out bonus episodes, extra content, ad-free episodes, and exclusive perks at patreon.com/realitybpod and chat with me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at realitybpod. And now, let's dive right in. Well, hello. Have you survived the week of 90 Day Fiancé in the social media world? Holy shit, what the hell is going on, you guys? In a nutshell, because it is so messy, it's so dirty, it probably will have changed by the time you're listening to this because you can't keep up with what's going on offline with these people. Okay, so where do we start? Let's see, Ashley and Jay, there's photos that came out of them getting married before the show even aired in Jamaica. So that's one thing. Then we have Larissa finding some videos and some conversation between Colt and some Kira girl. People are sending this Kira, they're calling her the side chick, death threats and all this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, you know, Colt's jerking off, sending her videos. That's punishment enough. And then all of a sudden, oh, Larissa's all cool with Kira. Don't bother her. Okay, well, it's not that easy, Larissa. So there's that. And then third, this came to my attention. I don't even remember because I try to black it out of my mind because it's so horrible and so disgusting. This was either last night or the night before. Remember Ricky? I know, try to remember because his 15 minutes are far beyond up. Ricky from before the 90 days went on an Instagram Live with another blogger or podcaster. I don't even really know. Well, this guy who I followed for like 5 minutes because it recommended it on Twitter, and then I realized, oh, this guy is really misogynist and quickly unfollowed and whatever. So he and Ricky went on this Instagram Live, and they start talking about Katie Not Holmes. Remember that whole thing with Katie Not Holmes and Ricky? If you don't remember, go several weeks back in the podcast because I've already forgotten some of the details. What you really need to know is that Ricky and this guy start talking about how Katie looks like a Chernobyl victim. Well, he might be laughing, saying, oh, it's just, you know, guy talk. No, this isn't just guy talk. They're talking about a woman who had a double mastectomy because she had breast cancer. I don't even know what stage it was. I don't know all the details. It really doesn't matter. When you start talking about a woman's body, whether she had a double mastectomy or not, and she's a swimsuit model, I don't give a fuck. Who the fuck do you think you are to be sitting there judging a woman's body, saying such horrible, judgmental things? And yeah, especially when they are a breast cancer survivor. It's disgusting. It's inexcusable. And let's not forget that Ricky is a father of two girls. Everyone knows better, especially a father, let alone a father of two daughters. So you know what? I really just hope that karma comes around and kicks him in his 3'4" ass hard. Okay, I feel slightly better, but I am still thoroughly disgusted. Okay, now let's get into 90 Day because there's a lot to talk about and we still have to get into Love After Lockup. God, I love these shows. Normally, I like to keep my favorite moments to talk about last just as a reward for myself for getting through the whole recap. But I'm going to talk about Jay and Ashley first, even though that moment with the scooter. Oh yes, we are going there. I know. Do you just have goosebumps because you know we are going to break it down? That was perhaps the best moment. This is a very big claim here. Perhaps one of the best top three moments of the 90 Day Fiancé franchise. Yeah, to me, it was that good. But we're going to get there. First, let's lead up to the doorway, shall we? So there's 4 more days to wed, Ashley and Jay. They're going to elope to Vegas. We hear Natalie outside screaming in a very beastly tone, hello,
Ashley.
Ashley goes to the door, swings it open. Remember, one motion. What? And then they take it out to the front lawn because, no, that's not what normal people do. That's not what you do. You don't open your door and just dash out to the front yard to have a conversation with your friend or even former friend. But you know what? The camera crew, they have our back. They know that if they did not have Ashley and Natalie in the front yard, they would not have gotten the shot of the scooter in the background. Now, even at this point, before I knew it was Ashley's scooter, I was already very excited. I had made a little note to look up the motor vehicle laws in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. Is a scooter street legal? Perhaps it's Jay's because he doesn't have his license. Or does Natalie have it? I mean, I already had every scenario running through my mind. And of course, I was hoping it was Natalie's. You know, not too often do I have very good things happen to me. So I wasn't too optimistic. But oh my God, it just brought me so much joy. Before I go any further, I want to make it very clear that I was wrong. I can admit when I was wrong and oh, how I was wrong about Natalie. A few weeks ago, when we first met her, I thought she was a really good friend. She's looking out for Ashley. She wants to make sure that her friend doesn't get hurt. She's our truth seeker, right? I think I even called her our voice of reason. But no, it turns out Natalie is just a really jealous friend. She's got an opportunity to get some attention on TV, and she wants every second of her 15 seconds of fame. For banging on a front door like that alone, Natalie should be getting some shit, let alone all the other stuff that she's done to Ashley. I don't even want to really repeat the things that she's put out there about Ashley because it really is Ashley's business. It's some pretty traumatic stuff. I don't want to go into it. This is supposed to be a fun podcast, but you know, I'll bag on Natalie because she kind of deserves it. So she's banging on the front door like that. No decent person does that. Who's going to dent up someone's front door? No one likes spending their hard-earned money at Home Depot on an aluminum freaking screen door. So anyway, Ashley then leaves Natalie in the front yard. She's done. I think it's over because Ashley's inside drinking her water. I would have been drinking something much stronger. But no, Natalie is still outside. She's yelling Ashley's name over and over again. That is so weird to me. I've never witnessed anything like that. No one I know stands outside people's houses and screams their name over and over again. And Natalie does not get the hint because not only has Ashley walked away from her, closed the door, is inside not answering to her screams, but then Natalie starts calling her over and over and over again. That is beyond any stalking I myself have done, and you know how I can deep dive. I mean, I know far too much about the Sister Wives mortgage situation than I really should have. And the fact that I'm side-eyeing Natalie says a lot. Then it happened. And I have been talking on Moms on the Rocks, my other podcast, about how I've been having these really strange coincidences with repeating numbers and all this kind of stuff. And now this scooter, like I'm almost scaring myself. I was wishing with all my might, like I said before, all my Christmas wishes. I just wanted to see Natalie scooter off on that little thing, and then it happened. So let's break it down because it's the little details that surround the scootering that make it just such a memorable, iconic 90 Day Fiancé moment. So she gets on, puts her little key in, she kicks the kickstand up, she puts her little sunglasses on, sans helmet. I mean, she is brave, just like a bull. Remember, she said, I'm like the bull waving the flag like, hello. Natalie, a scooter doesn't work like a car, just like the bull and the red flag thing. It doesn't work that way, sweetheart. The bull charges the red cloak, and then you can have things called red flags. But it, oh God, there's probably no use in me even trying to explain this to Natalie because, you know, maybe she's had some brain damage. Maybe she fell off the scooter. Maybe she went around a corner. Maybe she hit a little curb by a sidewalk. Perhaps she was on the sidewalk and she hit like those little bumpy things before you cross the street. She fell off and no one knows. She hit her head and that's why she's just gone psychotic. I kind of feel like Natalie on the scooter. Someone teach me how to make, is it GIFs or memes? I kind of want Natalie on the scooter to be the new Weekend at Bernie's Bernie. Like Natalie on the scooter just shows up in all these little random moments and these random scenes. Natalie in the sky with Santa's sleigh just scootering along with Rudolph. Where else could we have Nat? Oh, she could be in the Olympics, crossing the finish line at the Olympics with Usain Bolt, or she could be Michael Phelps in the pool. She's scootering along the side. Oh my God. Someone who is really good at this, please make something like that or show me how to do it. Okay, anyway, we don't see Jay and Ashley until well into the second hour, and they're finally in Las Vegas. They're swimming in the pool, and I really enjoyed that even Ashley, with this cute little figure, she was trying to cover up her stomach with a towel. I mean, we are all our own worst critic, and at least we all have that in common, right, ladies? So then there's some talk about sex drive and Jay wanting it more than 3 times a day, which I think is absolutely crazy. That's just not sustainable. That's Dr. Drew saying that you have sex addiction or love addiction. You know what? Maybe we need a series on that. Sharp Entertainment, give Dr. Drew a call. Would he not be the best on this show? It'd be a better version of Married at First Sight. Just Dr. Drew comes in during the midst of 90 Day Fiancé chaos and lays down the law. Oh, that I would watch. Okay, who's next? Oh, Colt and Larissa. Gotta, another couple that is really fucking with our 90 Day Fiancé. Don't ruin it for us. When you start getting crazy and you're bringing law enforcement and all this other shit into it, you're ruining production, you're ruining it for the network. Don't do that. We have such a good thing here. This has to be where we draw the line. Stop it, people who are signing up for 90 Day Fiancé and before the 90 days, don't fuck it up for the rest of us. There, I said it. All right, well, Colt is very calmly explaining to us that all hell broke loose between Larissa and my mother. All right, Colt, well, your button's about to break loose too because your boobs are growing at the same rate as your ego these days. I mean, this massive dork is sitting there on the couch. You all know what visual I'm going to here. He's sitting on his couch, the new couches, which I think that they were actually secondhand, but whatever, they have couches. His toes are in this fixed point. His calves are the size of my head because he never sought PT and OT help for his toe walking. It's really starting to piss me off. And please, PTs, OTs out there, help me out. Explain to us how when people toe walk when they're kids, if they don't correct that, they end up with these massive calves. And I'm not trying to diss people here. If you have a disability or whatever it might be, I get it. This just goes to my whole theory that he was just overly sheltered and helicopter mom and, you know, no one could ever do anything with Colt and Colt and mom have everything figured out together. He should have figured out the fucking toe walking at this point. And I certainly don't think his gold and glittery flip-flops are helping the situation. So he's sitting there on his laptop, probably talking to some other girls or editing his jerk-off video. And Larissa comes down and he tells her that he's looking at flights to Brazil. Well, Larissa doesn't think that he's serious, but he shows her, oh yeah, probably in a tab that he pulled up very quickly, that he is actually looking at flights. Now, her reaction I thought was really weird because most women or men would be absolutely devastated and start apologizing. But Larissa is a sociopath. Let's just call it like it is. And she starts playing the game right along with Colt. And it's at that point, I guess it's confirmed, I hate both of them, especially with the stuff that came out about Colt. He's not a victim and he's not stupid. He even said himself that he's intelligent. You know, when your partner is fucking crazy and you know it, and she's sitting there right in front of you kissing her diamond ring instead of kissing you when you make up, there is your damn sign. There's your red bull flag, as Natalie would call it. You know, Colt just wants someone to sleep with at night because even Cookie Dookie probably pieced the fuck out when Larissa got there. If the cat gets the point to get the hell out of there, then you should be seeing the signs as well. So fast forward to the next time we see Larissa, and she is just shellacking her face with layers upon layers of cheap makeup, all the foundations, all the powders, some Leanne Locken season one Real Housewives of Dallas blush. She says it's because she wants to be extra beautiful for Colt because they're going on a double date that night. And that's when we see Colty's friends, Andrew and Angela. They're smarty, they're nicey, and gosh darn it, they are not like John. They certainly are not like John because, you know, I think John is kind of cute. And, well, Andrew and Angela, they're nice. Well, they're also being paid because no one else would go on this date. And I mean, no one would choose to ride in the back of Colt's backseat by choice. Not only is there no air conditioning back there, but Colt is taking them to a surprise location. Now, I cannot imagine a scenario where Dave and I would be in the back of a car. The no AC thing alone, neither of us would get in. We'd check the hell out of there and go through Taco Bell drive-thru or something. But if we were to get together with a couple where the driver is taking us to a secret location for dinner and is all like, it's a surprise. No, that is fucking weird. Are we 5 years old? We're not supposed to know so we don't spoil our supper or some shit. So not only are they sweating through their underwear and being dragged through the Las Vegas desert with Colt at the wheel, but you have Larissa to initiate the typical Bickersons. What's that, honey bunny? I give you compliments. I mean, this was crazy. So crazy and awkward that for, well, just a few minutes, I was telling myself I would have given anything to be rainbow bright. And you know who I'm talking about. The wife, Angela, with the rainbow purse and the cute curls and the prerequisite braces, because every show on TLC has got to have some steel in it. So she's got the best vantage point to watch Colt and Larissa go at it. The four of them are in front of the restaurant at this point, neither Larissa nor Colt having enough social learning experience to know that you do not do this in public or in front of your friends. Now, here's the tricky thing. I think Larissa probably does have some reason to be upset with Colt. If Colt is basically ignoring her all the time and just wanting her to shut up and go along with all this weird shit and then have to have sex with him every night, any woman would be upset. But you could also argue that Colt has a reason to be upset because Larissa is Larissa. Even when Colt did exactly what Larissa was wanting him to do, compliment her and tell her how beautiful she is, she was then grossed out by him and she didn't want him to even touch her. So he was right. No matter what he says, what he does, he's always going to lose with her. Now, can we just get to Glasses McGee? Because, oh my God, you know that girl ripped off her glasses the second she saw Colt and Larissa stroll up to the door. She's probably thinking, oh shit. Why do they have to come during my shift again? Oh, the tension. Will Colt make love to her through their progressive lenses? Will he ask Glasses McGillicuddy if she's wearing contacts? Oh, yeah. I mean, it was so ridiculous. Now, I know there was some conversation about whether Larissa was crazy or not. She flat out asked Rainbow Bright and Andrew, but I could not keep my eyes off of Rainbow, off of anxious Angela. I mean, that sweet woman was so nervous. She was on the verge of an asthma attack, probably had some hives hiding underneath her little camisole dress thing. At one point, she had this piece of Jamaican carrot cake. You know, I was eyeing everything on that table. It was in front of her. She's taking like little perfect slow forkfuls one at a time, just a little bite. She's trying to be all polite and not eat too much in front of the camera. Girl, I would have done the same thing. I know this move so well. I'm 100% sure she went home starving, probably dehydrated too from sweating out every fluid that she's consumed in the last week because she's been sweating in the backseat of Colt's car. I mean, screw Colt and Larissa's love story. I need a classic TLC A Wedding Story of Angela and Andrew. I really want to know more about them. I'm not ashamed at all to admit that I watched every damn show every season, along with A Baby Story. Remember that show? From the time that it premiered, I want to say, when did that start coming out? Like 95, 96, every day after school, probably at least through 2001, 2002. Isn't that terrible? I remember specific things, specific couples. If anyone's interested in talking about A Wedding Story, A Baby Story, let's discuss, because man, that could be some fun Google deep diving. Where are they now? That's what we need. TLC, someone tell them we need updates. A Wedding Story, A Baby Story. That would be a huge hit, actually. I would buy a season of that on DVD. Wait, I actually wouldn't, because I don't think we have a DVD player. I think we have a Blu-ray, or maybe we don't anymore. I don't even know how we watch our movies. It's not on a disc. Plex? A cloud? Something like that. Whatever Dave has set up. Anyhow, if you just fell asleep during that, get a few more minutes of shut-eye, because I'm going to talk about Jonathan and Fernanda. Jonathan is meeting up with his one friend who looks like he could be one of Brett Kavanaugh's frat buddies back in the day. I'm totally bored with Jonathan and Fernanda. Last week it was family Jonathan versus John, and he's sad and cries because he should call his mom more. And now we're back to Fernanda being skeptical of John's whereabouts and if he's talking to other girls. So lame. It's so contrived at this point. And because they're so boring, we only get one other segment with them over an hour later. We're well into the second hour of the episode. And it's this little scene where Fernanda's pouting because she wants John to spend all his free time with her. I don't feel bad for John, and I'll tell you why. This is why you don't marry or even date a teenager. And don't think that it escaped my attention that Fernanda's tears suddenly dried up. There was no water flowing from her eyes when she got up and she went to her closet. She was pretending to pack up and she's saying, I can't do it, John. There were no tears flowing. She was just waiting to have him apologize. And then she would say, oh, okay, I'll stay. But he didn't do that. So they close out their segment with Fernanda making up a totally different story to her dad about being pushed too hard by John. It was absolutely not true, unless John is pushing her to shop online all day on Amazon and talk with her friends for hours on the phone with the phone that he paid for and with the boobs that he paid for. I didn't really like that comment that he said, oh, I paid for your boobs, because you don't say that in front of a camera crew. I'm all about taking the higher road, you guys. Okay, Kalani and Asuelu. I gotta tell you guys, if you have not seen this video of Asuelu dancing at some sort of, looks like a church function, and they're doing some sort of Samoan dancing, it is so adorable. You have to search on Facebook for it. Just search Asuelu 90 Day Fiance Ace or something. He is dancing with this older woman. I don't know. There's just something so sweet about it. He's doing these little jumpy kick moves and these little wave things with his hands. It's so sweet. His facial expressions. I completely get why Kalani fell in love with him, because he's just so charming, dancing with this older woman. So, so sweet. But let's talk about this week's episode. So 3 days ago, Kalani and Asuelu got some shocking news, and we see this because it's in those, you know, bold letters on the screen. So you're thinking, oh God, what happened? Did they get in a fight? Does Asuelu have to go home? No. Well, you see, because they were not using birth control, because Kalani's breastfeeding and Asuelu doesn't like to use condoms, guess what? Kalani's pregnant. She is super overwhelmed and emotional and scared, and I get it. My daughter was 4.5, 5 months old, just barely 5 months old when I found out I was pregnant with my son. And you absolutely go through shock and guilt, especially when your first one is so young, because you're thinking, how am I going to do this? Am I going to steal my firstborn's childhood and babyhood away from them by having another baby? And in the end, it ends up being great. My kids are 13 months apart. They are best friends. The first year is hard as hell. I'm not going to lie. It's the hardest thing I've ever done, but it's amazing now. So Kalani will come around. However, right now, she's scared because It's different than my situation. She isn't married. She has doubts about Asuelu, and that is a lot to take on. Plus, there's a cultural difference here, too. So while Asuelu is going to be very excited about having a large family because that's very common in Samoa, Kalani and Mother Kalani are really concerned because Asuelu isn't being realistic in their eyes. And, you know, he did purposely get Kalani pregnant to stay in America. Record scratch. Now, I'm going to be totally honest with you here. I don't like to read Facebook posts or go too deep into Twitter to see what people are thinking about the show before I spill all my thoughts here because I like to be pure, if you will. But I think what Kalani and Mother Kalani were saying was kind of shitty. I don't know if this is a popular opinion or not. I just feel like, you know, Kalani had sex too. It's not like the sex just happened next to her and Asuelu's sperm just swam their way across the sheets up into her uterus. You know, it's not all on him. I'm anxious to see if anyone else is feeling this way too, because I do like Kalani. It's really hard to just, I guess you don't have to be bashing her if you disagree with what she's saying, but in the 90 Day Fiancé world, you kind of have to pick sides. I think after the conversation they had over ice cream, where Asuelu was saying he just wants to say, I do, it's pretty clear that he didn't just come here to be sneaky and secretly impregnate Kalani without her knowledge. He came here all wide-eyed and in love with his Samoan sunshine and coconut family, baby Oliver dreams. He just wants to start his life and start his family with Kalani. I think it's super sweet. So was that ice cream that was all over his little toddler cheeks and his lips. I don't know whether it's just I want him to be my son. I guess I just see the very charming factor about Asuelu. Complete opposite end of the spectrum here. Get ready. Eric and Lita. 37 days to get married, and Lita is playing with Alessandro. And by play, I mean pushing the kid down the hallway and then just ultimately leaving the room for Jenica to watch him. You can tell so quickly by the way that she interacts with Alessandro that she has no idea what to do with him. I will bet any amount of money the reason she is so insistent on getting into Tasha's old room, she wants to put a TV in there, put a little gaming system in there, and then the Nintendo will raise Alessandro because she does not want that kid around her. I promise you. Eric shows up finally wearing some vest that I think came in a dress-up box for Alessandro. Oh, wait. It's a bowling shirt paired with a backpack with a water distribution system built in. Must be pretty rugged conditions in Baraboo, Wisconsin, huh, Eric? Immediately, I started sipping down my Crystal Light at record speed because Eric says, Tasha put me in a position where I had to choose between her or Lita. Oh, did she? Did she really, Eric? So Tasha found Lita playing pretend LARPing superhero on the internet and thought, oh, I know, this woman will be the perfect person to get my father out of my life. I'm going to make it so this woman, Lita, is going to force me out of my own home. Right. Okay, don't flatter yourself, Eric. You snaggle-toothed, black hole for a mouth, sweaty, piece of shit father. Oh, it's going to get worse, you guys. Lita then goes on to say her usual, I'm not the top priority bullshit. And then Eric says it's hard to have to choose between his new family and his current family. Deep breath all together now. No, there is no old, new, borrow blue kind of family shit. Family is family. You don't need any other adjectives. Eric, you're the only one saying that there is a choice in differentiating between the two and saying choosing Lita is how it's gotta be because Tasha won't leave the country. You know, she'll just come around in the end with time. No, that is not a justification for your selfish choice. That's an excuse for your selfish choice and taking the easy route and just being a shitty father for now because that's what you want to do. Speaking of fathers, we get to meet Eric's father. I thought we were going to get some light shed on why Eric developed into a monster human, but instead we get this little charming barbershop scene. You see, Eric, he's pretending he's a young bachelor getting advice from his pops on settling down finally. But turns out, Father Eric seems like a pretty stand-up guy despite Eric being an utter disappointment. You know, he's trying every angle to get Eric to see that he is choosing someone else over his own children. And I saw that Father Eric had offered Tasha a place to stay after Lita kicked her out. So I just think he is a really good grandpa in my book. He's disappointed in Eric, and I guess that's all we can ask of him at this point. Now let's talk about Tanya, not Harding, although could we really use a good Tanya Harding just to knock Lita down at the knees right about now? I'm talking about Eric's ex, Tanya, who wanted to meet Lita by the river. I don't think it was the best choice because now Lita has a perfect plan to dump somebody's body. You know, she's got quite a few people on her list. We all know that. So Baraboo PD, you know where to look first. Well, Lita strolls up to Tanya and just says, "Hey," and she does this little jazz hand whatever motion. Did you catch that? Now, Tanya, I don't know how she did it, but she ended up keeping her cool. She was being perfectly pleasant, far more pleasant than I could have been. This woman is already a saint in my book because she's been married and divorced from Eric. She doesn't even get one sentence out of her mouth before Lita cuts her off in this really bitchy tone of voice. Tanya says something like, "Oh, you know, you and the kids aren't getting along." And Lita says, "Kid, you said kids, just one." Well, after that, Lita just went on a rant. She starts saying, "Well, everyone knows I was right. I was right." Now, if I were Tanya, I would have said, "Everyone, you mean just one. You said everyone." But no, Tanya, she meant well, but here's what I think the issue is. I think she's going about it in the wrong way. Tanya's going about it in the way that a decent human being would discuss something. It hurts the kids. The kids want to get along. However, Lita doesn't give a shit about the kids. I've said this at least 10 times before. Lita doesn't even care about her own kids. So Eric's kids are just noise that she doesn't want around. So of course the threat that the kids are not going to go to her wedding isn't going to make Lita upset at all because she doesn't even want them in her life at all. The more I see Lita talk and show her true colors, I gotta tell you, the more I see her, and I'm not saying this as a joke, I really actually mean this, I see her as the typical female prisoner. You know the type I'm talking about. You can almost see Josh Mankiewicz sitting there interviewing her, the type of woman who's very unapologetic, saying, "Well, yeah, they hated their ex-husband and they hated his kids. And yeah, she had insurance policies out on them, but she wouldn't purposely hurt them. She doesn't even know why the fingerprints in her handbag would be at the scene of the crime. What are you implying, Josh?" Lita has got that personality. Whatever personality trait, the ISTB, whatever the hell it is, she's got it. The serial killer combination. Ding, ding, ding. If the fingerprint matches, if you know what I mean. All right, let's talk about Stephen and Olga. God, you guys, this is so dark. Much like Ashley, I think there are some things about Olga's past that are circulating around the internet, and I don't know whether they are true or not. I feel like if it is true, she's a victim of something. And even if it's not true, this girl has been through a lot. This young woman has been through a lot. And I think everyone just needs to kind of give her a break. She's already getting a lot of shit from Steven. She doesn't need any more eyes on her at all times. Now let's talk about what happened in last night's episode. So Steven and Olga, they're getting baby Richie's passport. And he's yelling at Olga to try to get the baby to smile. "Okay, Steven, Mr. Spock, Dr. Spock, let me just insert some gas into my newborn so he can smile for you on command." Now, not only does she have Steven over there eyeing her up and down, she's got this Russian camera guy who gives zero Russian fucks. He's making Richie look half primate in the photos. You think if the guy had Photoshop, he couldn't have just shaved down a little off the shoulder. Instead, he's got this baby looking like, "Huh," like a linebacker in the photos. Now back at the hotel, Steven, You know, it's crazy. He's so smart, but he's totally confused over this weird thing called an SSN. Jesus, Olga, I would have known what a SSN was if you hadn't been spending all that time paralyzed on the table and breastfeeding my son. God, it's all your fault. You know, for someone who is so condescending about everything and so proud to be an American, you think Stephen would be able to put it together that it's a social security number, but no, it doesn't matter because Stephen's just gonna take Richie to America if Olga doesn't get her visa because America has more opportunities. So there. Is that highly likely to be true? Yes. However, this is also true. Babies need to be fed and have a bond with their primary caregiver, and ripping a child away from that is denying an opportunity. How Olga is keeping it together, it's unreal to me, and how Stephen can be so obnoxious is beyond my scope of reasoning. I'm going to get into this family friend that he had on 90 Day Live later. But first, Stephen goes to this embassy, and this totally confused me. My research skills on the Google are pretty damn good. They might not be up to snuff, though, because I did not see anything on the U.S. Embassy site, the U.S. Embassy in Russia, Moscow site, about not being able to enter the embassy if you're not an American. Olga said, oh, she had to wait outside for 3 hours because she wasn't allowed inside. I didn't see anything about that, and I just can't see an embassy denying a nursing mother entry if she wants to feed her newborn, but who knows, whatever. I do know that Olga having to wait 3 hours outside must have been absolutely excruciating. Stephen comes around the corner eventually and starts saying, feed him first, Olga. Yeah, she knows, Stephen. I mean, the fact that the baby is screaming a hungry cry and the fact that her boobs are probably engorged and leaking all over the damn place, she's got it taken care of, Steve. Finally, Olga asks, how did it go? And Stephen hems and haws and says, it's hard to say. I'm trying to think of a way to say it. Oh, I know what it is. He can take the baby now. What don't you get? Stephen promised himself he would never have a child who didn't have a father. He never promised himself anything about a mother. Olga, you'll be fine. It'll be fine. I don't know why you're crying. I mean, you see, Stephen just doesn't want to miss anything. I mean, Olga can miss it because he didn't promise himself that, you know? I mean, he can't go back in time and promise his childhood Stephen self that his kid was going to have a mother. He only promised a father. Don't you get it? I mean, you guys, is it possible that they just casted people for this season from some leaked police records or juvie records or something? Because Stephen is another sociopath in this litter of them this season. Now, I want to talk quickly about 90 Day Live. I think Michelle Collins did a great job. I know she gets a lot of shit sometimes, but it's got to be hard, especially when you don't have people who are professional live interviewees. So let's talk about Molly. She was on first. She's doing great. She's highlighting her bra shop. She can pull off a royal blue. That was the color of the night, by the way. A bunch of guests were wearing it. I can't pull off royal blue. I cannot wear red, so I admire people who can. Molly looked incredible. There was quite a bit of time recapping what happened with Molly and Luis. We don't really need to see that all again. I'm not going to rehash it. Like I said, I think Michelle did a great job. She's getting into her groove. She's showing her personality. I think she's really funny. I don't think there's a whole lot of tea that Molly could really spill here. She wasn't willing to say anything about how Luis may or may not have used her. She doesn't know about his current marriage or if he is or isn't expecting a child with the new wife. However, she did have an update about her brother, Uncle Jesse. Jesse is getting married to some Norwegian bitch that isn't me. I know, totally unfair. I don't get why he isn't holding out for me. I mean, I'm married, but I just want him pining after me. I need to see him on TV. I need to see him single, loving his nieces. I don't want to see him flying off to Norwegia without any of us. R.I.P. Single Uncle Jesse. All right, well, then we get Brandy and Destiny, Ashley's friends. It was incredibly awkward. They gave no information, just a lot of makeup, a lot of ums, a lot of what the fuck is wrong with the chick with the bun on top of her head. The hair that she put into the bun, I don't think she realized that we were going to see the back of her head. She pulled the super high half up bun right on top of her head, like where her bangs would be, where her bangs would start, except she pulled it from like the middle of the back of her head. It was a lot of look, and she's a mess, and she definitely wanted to share the no information that she had. I don't know which one's Brandy or Destiny. It's pretty much the same name to me. Now let's talk about Tara. This is Steven's, quote, family friend. Again, she really had no information except that she thinks Olga is really sweet and she's really smart. Yeah, we already know that. That's why we have no idea why she's with Steven. She did say that she's known Steven for quite some time. She introduced him to Christ and, quote, he's a heck of a guy. I'll agree with that. He is a heck of a guy. Now then, Jesse Von Trapp shows up. He is looking like one of those little ventriloquist dolls again. I see that similarity. I think he resembles more of like a old dead Victorian man from the neck down. He looks kind of weirdly paralyzed. It's bizarre. And then in typical JVP fashion, he does lots of prayer hands. He's laughing during the flashback clips. He's throwing some, I won't even say passive aggressive, super aggressive slams in there, how he spent money on Darcy and helped her with her weight loss. He's such a delusional asshole. This is really where I think Michelle Collins shined. She did a really good job of asking him questions in order to call him on stuff. I mean, he was just talking, and she kept saying, I have to interrupt you to ask you a question. I have to interrupt you to ask you a question. But he didn't get it. He thinks that he is there to give us motivational speeches and thank his fans and give us what we've all been waiting for. No, you stupid idiot. He just keeps saying that he's humbled. He's doing namaste hands. A few times he says something like, and let's be clear, I wish Darcy all the best. Is it okay when she calls my mother and makes her suffer as she had long day fitness training and she needs her sleep? Absolutely not. But let me be clear, I wish her my best. Then Michelle cuts him off again, asks him if he's dating. And well, you guys, Jesse wants to keep things mysterious because he wants to come back on the show because he misses us. You guys, he misses us. He even namaste handed it. So he must really mean it. But he's just so humbled. He loves America. His heart is here and home is where the heart is. And he thinks American women are strong and beautiful and lots of words and lots of humbles. And that's interesting. All in all, it was Jesse Von Trapp. He gaslights and he doesn't shut the fuck up. So that was basically it. Really no sparks or stabs were thrown between Jesse and Molly at the end of the show. I would say in the 90 Day Live comparison, it's worth a watch. If you missed it, you didn't miss anything big. Maybe fast forward to the parts with Jesse because it's just really fun to watch what a fuck up he is. All right, after a very quick break, let's get into some Love After Lockup. It really is the most wonderful time of the year. Also, the time I realize I need clothes with a little extra stretch to them. Now, the budget is tight in the Huff household right now with the holidays and home improvement, but I'm not even worried about getting myself some new stretchy jeans because I shop on Poshmark. Yes, I'm not only a podcaster, I'm also a client. Now, I went on the free Poshmark app the other day, searched for the brands of jeans I love, cut from the cloths, and believe it or not, I really like American Eagle jeans too. The great thing about Poshmark is that you're shopping from millions of closets from across America, so you can find exactly what you want. I found a pair of jeans I loved, new with tags, but instead of just purchasing the price listed, I offered the seller $40, and guess what? She accepted. It's that easy. $90 jeans for $40, and shipping is so easy on both ends that I received them by the end of the week. It's actually so easy, I forgot that I had a really nice watch I received as a gift. I've never opened it, so guess what I will be selling soon? You know, don't tell Dave. I'm just going to keep the proceeds, keep shopping, and next time it looks like some new running shoes will make their way to my cart. Listeners of RealiTV get $5 off your first purchase by entering referral code RealiTV. Maybe you want to find something cute for the holidays, New Year's Eve, or maybe even some cozy pajamas. Come on, you know you're tempted. Just do it. Go to Poshmark.com or the Poshmark app and remember to use referral code REALITV, R-E-A-L-I-T-V. Poshmark.com, the easiest way to buy and sell fashion. It's episode 2 of season 2 of Love After Lockup. It's not disappointing. Season 1 was pretty good, but I think season 2 is really, it's really upped the game. Now let's start with Matt and Caitlin. We have one more day until Matt is released, and Caitlin's reminiscing about the day when they fell, oh, I'm sorry, the email where she fell in love. You guys remember those days when you'd have AOL, you'd dial up to the nearest pedophile around, and oh, the sparks would fly until someone picked up the phone at your house, and then, God, Mom, I'm on the computer, hang up. Yeah, is that a flashback or what? Well, Caitlin is super psyched because she's not doing this alone. She's got a friend, Kelly, who's coming over, and it's super convenient because Kelly just so happens to be Matt's, Sally's girlfriend. Celly is the slang for fellow inmate. It's just that, you know, Celly has a certain je ne sais quoi about it instead of fellow inmate. So Caitlin just loves this prison wife life. I am convinced of it. She loves the drama. She's rubbing it into Kelly that she gets to see Matt in 13 hours and 27 minutes and 6 seconds. Here's Kelly, who's been conned for the last year. She's still got 4 more years of overdraft fees in front of her. And Caitlin's just lounging all over her passenger seat like she's a fucking toddler on Teen Mom or something. You know, where they do that back arch thing. You're trying to get him in the car seat. Can't she just sit there in peace? I hope you guys know what I'm talking about. Who sits like that in a passenger seat? I don't know if Caitlin's on uppers or something. It was bizarre. She's crawling out of her skin. She's got to settle the fuck down. I also need to know more about this hotel they stayed at because they got Andy's mints and a stuffed animal upon arrival. So I want to break this down. This place was maybe a Holiday Inn Express at its best. Holiday Inns and Ramadas, they don't give you that kind of stuff. I'm wondering if this was an overeager local hotel manager trying to make a really big first impression for us viewers, or maybe he or she was trying to prove to their regional manager that they have what it takes to be the big city manager of whatever city is closest to, adjacent to Roy. And if so, why did they choose the stuffed animal dog? I mean, why would you not get a snack basket? Why are you going to get a Beanie Boo at the Dollar General? Why not make something like some almonds or some trail mix? Or I demand answers. I need to know more about this. Does anyone live near Roy or wherever it is that they're having this hotel? Because it just seems so random and something I really need to know more about. Surprisingly, Caitlin doesn't care that much. She cares more about wearing a dress because, yeah, I can't even go there. It's just gross. So let's fast forward to release day. Once again, Caitlin has got to be prancing around in her bra for all the world to see. We get it. And Kelly gets it too because Caitlin's stomping around as loud as could be in that hotel room in the morning. She's getting ready. She's loud talking, blow drying her hair. All the while, Kelly's trying to sleep in the bed, but she can't because all the freaking lights are on. And then for Caitlin to say, well, I don't care what I look like. Right. Sure, Jan. I mean, what she picked would lead you to believe what she's saying because she's wearing this lime green Walmart swimsuit cover up with a old granny sweater, but she absolutely cares what she looks like. Who the fuck is she kidding? Now, Kelly is going to try to get some more shut eye at the hotel, and Caitlin's going to drive all by herself to the prison to pick up Matt. It's so sweet. She just wants to count his freckles and his moles and look at his toes. Okay, you weirdo, just go into dermatology already. We don't need to hear about it. Well, she finally gets there. She drives up to what looks like Stephen Avery's salvage yard, and the guards tell her to go in. She pulls up into a parking spot, and all of a sudden, 3 guards come down and tell her that they don't want people on prison grounds. I'm taking that as they don't want cameras to see how or where prisoners are released. Now, Caitlin has a very short fuse, and she's very jumpy. but I would be pissed too if I were her. The fact that they're not going to tell her where they're releasing him, that seems very weird. What immediately came to my mind as she was losing her shit in the car was, okay, think of a plan, go wait at the bottom of the hill, then if they don't release him there out of the car that they're going to drive him down in, follow the van or the car, and then just stop and pick him up wherever they let him out. It's not that difficult. Instead, Caitlin just starts screaming and crying, and she's probably going to get him locked back up again because she's going to start swinging something around. I've seen Jerry Springer a time or two, 15 or 20 years ago. Crazy doesn't change that much in that short amount of time. Let's talk about Megan, Michael, and Sarah next. Oh, the shade, WeTV. I loved the three photos and then Sarah's being bumped out of the way to make room for Megan's bridal dress shopping scene. It was so good. So we have Megan coming out and immediately I love her. I think she's cute. She's adorable. She's so optimistic. But Megra. Believing Michael wants to marry you when he proposed over the phone? No, that's not the way it's done, girl. Now then we cut to Sarah, who's coming out in her dress in another salon. The daughter of hers, Aviana, something like that. She's absolutely adorable. Her little sweet cheeks, so cute. Sarah weirds me out a little bit, though, and let me tell you why. She's talking a lot about having sex with Michael, even alluding to it in front of her grandma and her kid. I think that's weird. I think it's just a sign of respect. Somehow her ultra, very short, bob-haired grandma is less of a prude than me. I don't know how that happens. Catholic Church, congratulations. You did quite a number on me. But let's talk about these dresses because I love a makeover or a dress scene. The first dress, let's talk about Sarah. She comes out in a dress that they don't show her standing in front of the mirror, but she walks out. It's got a very deep V-neck on it, like tank sleeves or something. I loved that on her. The strapless dress, the second one we saw, I think it kind of brought out her chubby cheeks more, and that's not a diss. I have chubby cheeks too. Now, Megan, oh girl, she's got a pass on that dress that is not a say yes to the dress. I hated everything about it. The long sleeves, that gold shit around the waist, the tiara with the weird veil placement. Nothing about that dress was pretty to me. Megan can do better. Later, we see Megan talking to her friend about how she's excited to wear this new dress to pick up Mike. And he's Mike now. He's not even Michael. He's Prison Mike. Megan is so overly optimistic. She's saying, without a doubt, she knows that they're in it for the long haul because she visited him last December and they had this instant connection. Now, meanwhile, we have Sarah. She's in the park working out with the same friend who was at the dress fitting. I knew at the dress fitting, the second I saw those arms on that chick, I knew she was into CrossFit. I mean, my kid's PE teacher, he's into it. He's got my kids so afraid of him and CrossFit that they do voluntary wall sits before bed. I'm not kidding. These CrossFit people are like really into CrossFit. Now, the reason I'm pointing this out was that I was shocked CrossFit friend didn't full on Hulk out on Sarah when, you ready for this? You guys, something just fell down in my office. I feel like it's the CrossFit gods. They're coming after me. Is it CrossFit friend? Okay, I'm going to proceed with caution. Sarah married Michael while he was in prison. So this was October 2017. And remember, we just saw photos of Megan months after that with Prison Mike in prison having their full-on relationship. So yeah, Michael / Prison Mike is a big old asshole. Now, CrossFit is pissed and she's skeptical as hell because Michael has always cheated on Sarah in the past. It was very interesting to me how CrossFit's honesty only came out after she realized that Sarah made a really stupid decision and was lying to her. Sarah is frustratingly naive, and it just makes you cringe because she sounds so stupid when she's going on and on and on about if anyone's going to make it, it's going to be Michael and I. Because you cut to Megan, who we learn has spent $12,000 on phone calls to Michael. Megan, send me the $12,000. I'll figure out how you can talk to him for free. Give me the 12 grand. This is probably stupid for me to say this, but I have been doing this podcast for over a year and I probably have not even made $12,000. She's spending this just to talk to a prisoner. I mean, maybe it's time I find myself a sucker who thinks I'm in prison. I could pull some Susie Orman level Lizzie stuff and really come out on top. Ooh, of Scott in a ditch. We'll get to that in a minute. Never mind. Okay, nix that idea. I'll just earn it the good old-fashioned way. Let's talk about Tracy and Clint, or really just Clint because we haven't met Tracy yet. Still one more day until she gets released, and Clint is at his parents' house. The Kendall's kitchen, it has done pretty damn well in this economy. The house is very nice, very clean, very pretty, nicely done family Clint. Mother Clint runs a tight ship, and you know that because she's got some clipboards, she's got some Sharpies, some sort of yellow transparency to keep track of what the fuck Clint is fucking up. I mean, it blows my mind that these parents who seem to have their shit together can produce such a scratched up, sallow-skinned weirdo of a son. I mean, seriously, what is up with this guy? Do you think it's a substance abuse thing or just a low IQ thing? I don't know. Well, King Kendall, turns out, I think he's actually a pretty lovable guy. I had some skepticism last week when he was behind the big old desk at the kitchen, but when he's not in that back office, I think he's pretty lovable. He loves his dogs, and the grimace, this little oof, he gave behind Clint's back when Clint said, "She's my goddess. I've never been so sure about anything in my life." And he just kind of did this, ooh. I mean, that is the kind of saltiness and doubt I love and appreciate in someone. Let's head over to Kenosha now and meet up with Lizzie and Scott. Poor Wisconsin. Baraboo's got Eric, Kenosha has Scott, and now Lizzie. And they also have Scott's son, Adam, who is a fucking monster. Yeah, I'm going there. The son. He's not immune from the snark. This guy is laying with his head on a hotel lobby couch, and his nasty shoes are on it too. I mean, how dare you? I put my luggage on couches like this, and those germs from your head and your feet get transferred to my luggage, which then gets transferred onto any surface that I might accidentally brush it against. All hotel surfaces are lava, people. Do not lay down. Do not walk on anything without socks. Don't touch anything on the walls. Do not touch the remotes. Hand towels are your friends, and do not ever, ever drink out of any cups that are not disposable. I'm telling you this because I love you guys. I want to keep you alive. Well, Jasmine is also in Wisconsin. So far, I really feel badly for this young woman. She's making her way down, let's just consider it hot coals at this point, the hallway. And she appears to be wearing a romper with the spaghetti straps taken down and tucked not so perfectly into the boob section or under her armpits. I think she should have just left the straps up. They're fine. Ask your mom. She uses straps to sew herself thongs and shit. It's fine. You don't need to be strapless. Now, Scott introduces Jasmine to Adam, his son, by saying, "This is your brother," which I would like to say is a real foot-in-the-mouth moment. Scott, just shut your mouth. Do not introduce your son to a girl he's never met and say your brother and sister. Now, it doesn't work that way. You're not the fucking Brady Bunch. Now, I'm going to admit that I feel like I missed a lot last season and last week, or maybe we all did, because I didn't realize that Jasmine hadn't seen her mom since she was 8, and Scott has only seen Lizzie in person 2 times. I don't know if I'm getting storylines mixed up or I've just been under a cloud of Lizzie's magic, but I just assumed that Scott had seen her 10 or 20 times over the last couple years. So hearing this or seeing it, that They've only seen each other twice, and Jasmine never in the past 10 years. I mean, what the fuck is wrong with these people? Well, then we get to the three of them waiting on the roadside for Lizzie, very Andrea in her slippers on the side of the highway, and then Lizzie's high heels, some weird Visine bottle in the van, and nightmare music. Dun, 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 dun. Here she comes. Oh, God. Lizzie certainly knows her angles in those prison photo shoots because, you guys, she looked different. Hold that thought. Oh, she's running in heels. Oh, she's gaining speed. She's leaping. Oh, dear God. She's taken Scott down. This scene, it brought flashbacks of when I, too, had way too much confidence and also way too much to drink at my friend's wedding. And I thought I could be Jennifer Grey and Dave was my Patrick Swayze. And turns out Dave doesn't care if anyone puts me in the corner because the lift wasn't all that successful and I ripped the back of my dress, much like how Lizzie took Scott down and straddled him in the weeds. I really did not think Scott was going to be able to just bounce right back up after that, but he did. I mean, the man has got some resilience. Now, Jasmine, yeah, the daughter that Lizzie left 9-10 years ago and hasn't seen since, well, she got a quick hug and selfie along with the first comment being, "Oh, I'm so glad to be out after 10 years. You're so pretty." Now, I might get shit for this. Again, I don't really read a whole ton of the comments that people make during the show. I just want to go into this with my own opinion and mind frame. But I thought that was so shitty. The first person, without a doubt, to have received the first hug should be your daughter, followed by a comment about her. Like, "How are you doing? I love you. I'm so sorry. I don't want to let you go." But no, it's all about Lizzie. I already hate Lizzie, just knowing what I know, but I hate her even more now. It should have been all about Jasmine in that moment. And Scott might be hating her too, because as soon as a bill for that new bridge that he needs after Lizzie knocked it the fuck out of his mouth, bridges are not cheap. I don't have one myself, but any dental work is not going to be cheap. And I mean, this bitch is out of prison. Think about this. For 10 minutes, and the universe is already sending the message, "It's not too late to leave. No, no, don't leave the prison yet. Stay here. Look for that bridge. Guards, lock her up." Plenty of heartbreak ahead. I don't know who's first, Jasmine or Scott. I guess we'll just have to see. Okay, next up is a new couple. New couple alert, Brittany and Marcelino. We learn Brittany is a 27-year-old woman who has been in prison for 2 years for conspiracy to commit burglary. Marcelino is 40. He was in the Marine Corps for 4 years where he learned to overcome with honor and commitment. I made a note, not enough commitment to keep that Marine photo in an album because the thing looked like it had seen a club or a bar or several single mixers or several hundred. Now, Marcelino is a descendant of the Tarzan tribe and he's got photos to prove it. He is downright gorgeous in that one photo of his. He's stunning. His skin is bronzed. He has got some great eyebrows. He's got some eye makeup that would make any woman jealous. Marcelino, he's just really, really pretty in that photo. But it's not all materialistic. And it's not all about his looks, despite his pretty photos. He's a deep thinker. He's even abstained from sex for the last year because during this time of deep reflection, he fell into himself. And he also fell into the search engine of meetinmate.com. I'm absolutely certain that's exactly what the Dalai Lama had in mind when he talks of reflection and growth. Now, during Marcelino's meditation, he found Brittany, a four-time felon. They emailed, then they talked, then the visit started, and before Marcelino knew it, he was in love with her. Marcelino's boat-owning friend, he just doesn't believe it. He's our voice of reason. He's our first vore I think we've seen in a while. He doesn't understand why Marcelino would choose a felon out of all the women he can have his pick from because he's a good-looking guy. Is he, though? I mean, really? Is he, though? So let's talk about Brittany. We learn that she ran away from home when she was 12, and right there, alarm bells are ringing. I'm wondering what kind of traumatic childhood she had that got her to this point, because you don't just go into prison when you're 19 years old. You don't just run away when you're 12 for no reason. She went to prison for 5 years when she was 19 because she stole a car, took it across state lines. You know how hard they are. They're such sticklers when you steal things, so that's why she got 5 years. Like I said, Marcelino is all about this Marine thing. He's going to take the Marine Corps method. He's going to apply it to Brittany. I mean, what can go wrong? The guy's all sonnets and slogans and inspirational memes. He's got the Jesse Von Trapp namaste prayer hands. It's crazy. It's a little scary too, because pair that with the fact that he drives down to the prison. Yeah, get this. He drives down to the prison. He stands outside while he calls her and talks to her on the phone so they can be close to each other. This is something every crazy middle school, high school, we're falling in love relationship. One or both of the parties would do something like that, but not a 40-year-old guy. It's something is real off with Marcelino. I don't think it's just Brittany's weird and he's normal and poor Marcelino. He's got some shit going on too. Now, surprisingly, we don't have Tony and Angela again this week. I kind of miss them. I want to know what's going on with them. Now, previews for next week. I can't believe it. My DVR cut it off, so I didn't get to see what's coming up. I'll tell you what is coming up on Patreon this week, and that is, it's always mega size, Teen Mom OG Recap with my buddy Amanda. We have a very fun surprise planned for next week's Patreon. I'll just give you a hint, and I'll say, if you are a fan of The Office, you are not going to want to miss it. I also have another Patreon episode coming up over the next week or two. If you are a fan of SNL and you know a lot of classic Christmas skits, make sure you don't miss it, because I haven't recorded it yet, but I'm super, super excited about it. You're going to love it. Next week, I am going to bring you another recap. Yes, the week of Christmas, I will recap 90 Day Fiancé and Love After Lockup. The week after that, which is the week of New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, I'm going to take a week off to spend with my kids and my family. But after that, we'll be right back on schedule. So in the meantime, I hope you have a great week. Make sure you get all your holiday shopping done. Make sure you take some time for yourself. Leave a review on iTunes. Subscribe on Patreon. All those links are in the show notes. Thanks so much for supporting me, supporting the podcast, supporting each other. I'll talk to you soon. Stay salty.